Saatchi. I hear you're at a stage in life now where you're starting to think about downsizing from your larger residential garden into a smaller townhouse. So how do you think you're going to make that adjustment?
Oh, that's a really good question, Fleur. Seriously, the idea of losing the garden that I have at the moment, which is a big garden, and going to something smaller fills me with fear, but also fills me with a feeling of freedom and potential weekends back from the garden. But it is something that I guess gives an opportunity to really think about, well, what would I do if I had a small garden, and how am I going to design it so I get the absolute most that I possibly can?
Yeah, because small gardens can be quite challenging, and I think that the biggest problem people have going, it's in your situation, is they try to take a bit of what they had in their old garden and reinvent their courtyard or their small townhouse garden as a smaller version of what they had.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And so many things need to be done differently when you're in a small garden space. Things like, if you've got just a balcony, you can't use the same kind of quantities of soil or materials because you've got a weight issue. And then there's, you know, where's the sun? Do I get the sun all day? I had a balcony previously, which was like a tornado zone because it was very exposed. So all of those things you really have to think about differently, let alone the fact that you've got this small space that you need to kind of fit things in.
It's going to take a lot of discipline because, you know, you've got to weigh up, you know, are you going to be able to grow those veggies? Is that going to be something you have to let go of? Is your balcony or your courtyard going to just be a space for you to just sit there quietly and enjoy? So I think there's a lot to consider today, and we're really going to tackle some of those challenges that come with designing a small space.
As you can probably tell, you're listening to the On Garden Design podcast with longtime friends Fleur and Saatchi, where we chat about what makes a garden great, and we try and inspire and make designing accessible to anyone who is interested in gardens. Your hosts are longtime friends Fleur and Saatchi, and that's me, who bring a fresh perspective and their life experience to designing gardens as a second career. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, and you can follow us on Spotify so you know when the next episode is available. So Fleur, we're talking about small gardens today. Let's talk a bit more.
Right. Well, we've got a lot to think through today because it really is quite a challenging space. And small spaces just demand simplicity, discipline and discernment.
They do. They do. And I think that's really key. It's almost like, and we were just talking before, particularly if you're in a smaller space, and I get that a lot of people have a small garden because they've chosen to maximise their block, but for a lot of people it's also about you're in an apartment or you're in a townhouse like I'm thinking of downsizing. Your garden and that space that you have as a garden or a balcony or whatever it is becomes so important because it's part of that limited living space you have, so you want to make the most of it.
Yeah, so maybe the thing where you've got to start with is say, what do I want to use the space for? What is important to my new lifestyle or this transition into this smaller space that is the most important reason to have my outdoor area?
That's right. You're no longer going to be growing your own cabbage. It might be a pot of tomatoes.
You might really irritate your neighbours if you do try the pumpkins as they crawl all over their walls or down the side.
That's exactly right. So that's a really good point, making sure that you're actually thinking about what's the purpose of this space. Do you actually need to entertain? Is it just something to look at? Do you need a space for kids, grandkids, whatever it might be? How are we going to actually shape the place?
Yeah, and in fact, we always think that small space, you have this sort of visual kind of pop into your head that it's a little bistro table and somewhere to sit and a couple of nice pot plants. But I want to throw one out there, which is a really fun design that I did, and I'll just describe Beck's design brief to me, which was about a courtyard that was for entertainment for her two cats and two dogs.
Oh,
and that was the entire premise. That was it. And she said, look, you know, I'm out during the day. I'm quite busy, but I need a space that my pets can be entertained. So the whole design was focused on the functionalities that created interest for the pets.
Wow.
So, you know, we talked about we had different levels and we had areas where the pets could walk around and they'd feel like they were in a different space. They go up and down stairs. They had a place to do their business. There were mirrors they could look at themselves. Cats particularly like that, apparently.
These were clearly very loved pets. But I think very that's a loved. Great example of being really clear about what your space is for. And the other thing that I always reflect on when I think about gardens and that are in small spaces, often they are a walled, you know, courtyard or a limited balcony. They often look really sad and they're often cold. They might have some mold growing or some moss, and they're often quite dirty as well. So these are all things you want to be thinking about as you're designing, because if you're not a high maintenance person and you want to sit on nicely clean surfaces, then you want to be thinking about what you're putting out in that small space.
Yeah. Well, let's have a think about the scope of when we say small space gardens. Yes. What are we talking about here?
Yes, good.
So you've
good
described
question.
Sort of kind of cold sort of small additions of a
horrible ones. So they're not all like that. I acknowledge that.
Yeah. So we're in some cases we're talking about balconies.
Yep.
And therefore you're going to have a tiled or a concrete kind of
space
with some balustrading.
Yeah.
Might be walling or
whatever it might be. Yeah.
In other cases, we might be talking about a veranda or a courtyard, and that may be completely concrete. If you're in a townhouse, you might have access to dirt if you're on the lower floor.
Yeah, that's right. A ground floor is
so
different.
Ground floor, with dirt is a lot more opportunity than ground floor with a concrete base. Got to think of it differently.
But we might also be talking about a larger house on a small block where, you have either a very narrow or thin kind of garden, or you have just a very limited space because it's actually taken up by other things, other structures. So let's talk a bit about, because I think we talked previously about the principles of garden design, and I think here for small spaces, these are really important because everything seems to be exaggerated in a small space. And if I just have to go to an analogy, in a house or in a small room, even if you have a few things on the floor, it looks really messy. Whereas in a big house, you can have a few things on the floor and it doesn't look so messy. So it's the same in a small space. It kind of exaggerates the effect of having things not quite in the right place. So you really want to be thinking about your key principles of garden design, which I think we decided when we were talking about it, were probably scale and unity.
Yeah, definitely. Scale is really important. And I always say to people, look, it's better to have to overscale a few deliberate items than to underscale and have a whole lot of itty bitty clutter.
Yes, because the itty-bitty looks like clutter in
it
this
does,
small space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I say itty-bitty clutter, often that means pots.
Pots. That's
pots
right.
Pots and accessories that you've bought that are sentimental from a previous place, and they're just sort of little bits and pieces of things and pot stands and all sorts of stuff like that just takes up valuable floor space.
Often doesn't have much of a theme running through it either, and can be sort of sentimental value, therefore you have the pink pot that so-and-so gave you next to the orange pot that's big and slightly cracked from someone else and that kind of thing. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I always say, like, if you're going to do a pot, get a big pot and in that one pot put in a thriller, a spiller and a filler. Rather than, like that,
yeah,
rather
right.
than three separate pots with three different plants in it.
Yes.
So when I say spiller, thriller and filler, I'm talking about plants.
Yes,
things of
that course.
Go up, things that go down, things that go kind of fill a space.
And you might decide that you want to put your, whatever that sculpture is that someone gave you as one of those. It might be your thriller, filler or spiller, whatever it might be as well.
I'm trying to think of a spiller sculpture.
I know, I am too. I'm sure there's one out there. I'm sure right. there's one. It's a bit of tinsel maybe.
That's right.
So I think if we go to that scale thing, you do need to be thinking about this is the size of my space. And what do I want to put in here that isn't going to create a cluttered feel, but is also going to give a sense of, a focal point? Because you don't want your eye to just be, I guess, dispersed almost as it looks across your space. You do want it to be drawn to something, and you want to be thinking that that thing has the right scale.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we're talking about having the relationship of items to each other and,
yes.
and items to the space. So think vertical and think horizontal.
Yes.
So what can you go up to give you that better sense of scale? And also think about layering plants, because they can create a depth in a space that actually makes the space feel more generous than if you just put things right out to the walls. And the other one I just love using in small spaces is mirrors.
Yeah.
Because it distorts the boundaries. It creates a sense that there's more space going into another room, or it just gives more light into an area. And there's some rules with sighting mirrors, but generally they're a great way to play with scale.
That also reminds me, the other thing that you can think about in terms of your scale as well is there something around your space that's not in your space that you can also draw on? So it might be a view. It might be a beautiful tree that is somewhere in the vicinity. who knows, your next door neighbour might have an amazing sculpture that sticks out. Whatever it might be, can you borrow something from another space that also gives that sense of more space and a bit more depth?
Yeah, and I often worry about borrowed landscape in my context, where I've done this lovely mural where the trunk of the silky oak grevillea is painted into the mural, and if the neighbour chops that tree down, the mural's going to look rather odd. Then I'm going to have to paint over that part of the mural, put something else there.
There is a remedy. There is a remedy. You can always go out and chain yourself to the tree as they're chopping it down. Become an activist.
But yeah, we know we generally have the idea of being able to borrow view is beautiful, and it solves some problems for you.
Yeah, that's right. Space. The other, I guess, key principle that we've talked about though is unity. And in this space, again, it's really important. And it goes back to this, you want to have something that is providing a sense of everything fits together. It's all intended to be together. It's got a sense of, I guess, you know, the colours and the plants and everything comes together. It's all as one. And back to that cluttered feel, if you have things that are not, don't have a sense of unity, you'll find that cluttered, disorganised feel emerging again. And I think small spaces, simplicity is a big one, because it is something that you really, and the unity can bring that simplicity.
So let's have some practical examples
about
unity.
Yeah, good idea.
Okay. So I think practical examples is having one surface finish.
Yes,
for example.
Yes, good idea.
That's unifying that space. What else have you got?
Well, plants. You could have, you know, that sort of repetition of a few themed plants. So you might have, you know, a couple of trees, but they're of the same species and they give the same look right through wherever you've... And trees is probably not a great example in a small space necessarily, but it might be that you're using a border that you use in all of the garden beds that you might have there. Colour is another one, of course.
And colour in foliage or colour in accessories?
Well, both.
Okay.
It might be both. Mm. And I mean, that said, again, you've got to be thinking about how you're going to make this space yours. And so it might be that you actually want to have a bit of coloured foliage, but you do want to be thinking about your colour palette, and you don't want it to be an expansive colour palette in a small space, because then it starts to get cluttered and disorganised again.
Yeah. And when we did Laura's balcony, which is a beautiful, beautiful outlook, gorgeous space, we took the entire design based on a piece of artwork that she had loved in her life, and she had downsized and she bought this bit of artwork, and we said, right, the colours in this artwork, it was kind of a bit Balinese, it had some beautiful rich tones of kind of golds and deep reds and those sort of things. And so we themed everything off that.
Mm.
And so that became kind of like the celebratory piece, and the furniture and the pots were subordinate to that, but they worked in the same colour range.
Absolutely.
And the
yeah.
background walls were painted to allow the artwork to pop but not compete with it.
Yeah.
So that's a good example of
colour.
Yeah,
that's a great example of colour. And I think that also goes then to the hardscapes that you might use. If you are putting in paving, or if you've got garden bed edging, making sure that all of those things are also unifying in your colours, and there's a bit of repetition in there as well about how things come together. So I think that's enough on probably the key principles. Scale, unity, having a focal point, they're the key things.
And then that gives us an opportunity to really get into the next part, which is because we want to give our listeners practical examples and ideas and inspiration so that you look at your own small space and you think, ha, I've got a bit of a checklist here of things I can kind of do. So we're going to have a look at specifically how we can use plants, how we can use materials, and how we can use accessories in our small space.
Perfect.
Let's start with plants.
Let's, because then we can spend 10 minutes on plants, because they're always fun to talk about. So what are the sort of things you think about when you think about plants in a small space?
Yeah, so I tend to think about the effect that a plant is going to give me. So first thing I think about is kind of layers and verticality.
Yep.
So one of the types of plants that I really enjoy in a courtyard, and I'm thinking, not a high-level balcony because it's a bit wind-prone, but is taking a grafted standard. And so what
does that mean? What does
it
that
kind of
like?
Means like a tree on a lollipop tree.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so you can get, and they're grafted to a trunk which is about between 1.5 and 1.8 metres high, and then the foliage all happens at the top. So what you're doing is you're putting an umbrella into your courtyard, and the tree might only expand to maybe 1 or 2 metres wide. But it's just enough then that you've got a sort of a living umbrella, and then underneath that you can put layers of other plants without making the space feel really cluttered.
And the other thing you're doing is you're using that empty space and creating some vertical interest as well. And humans like to be enclosed, so that gives you almost a bit of that roof feel.
Yeah, it's a living umbrella.
Yeah,
without
right.
having to replace the you know your shade umbrella all the time, because they
right.
look pretty daggy after a while.
They do, although you know you're not going to get a shade effect if it's a deciduous tree, of course. But I think that's right. It's that kind of what you were talking about was building a strong foliage framework in your garden, in your small garden space, because this is not the space for a spring kind of garden, because you want it to be looking, because it's an extension of your house, much more so than perhaps a large garden. You want it to be looking and feeling like a space you can use year round.
Yeah, look, I tend to default to evergreens in small spaces.
Yes.
Because you do get bang for your buck out of every one of those plants. But then I do like a little pop of colour, and I think that most people like to see a seasonality built into their spaces.
Yeah.
So if you're in a climate where you do get seasonality in foliage interest, then I think, you know, use some, say maybe the grafted tree, the small tree, might be the deciduous item, because you want the sun in winter and you want that shade in summer. And then underneath you're going to have layers of shrubs that are evergreens.
That's right.
And it's about picking, you know, I think ones that have got a couple of different effects. So it might just not be evergreen, but it also might be architectural foliage. And so
that's
you've got
right.
things like cycads or ferns or, you know, the mothers-in-law tongue.
Yeah,
you know, those
yeah.
kind of things
aloes.
That are just,
yes.
yeah, that have just got some sort of really good effect, and they're really hardy and they can cope with the sort of conditions that they might be sitting in a pot.
Yes.
Or in a bit of shade or a bit of too much sun.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And I guess this is the sort of the principle that you're talking about behind there is plants really, apart from being hardy, also should have some kind of multi-seasonal interest here. We're talking about, this is where plants have to work hard. If you're putting it in a small garden, they're there all the time, they're in your face. They need to be showing their best feature all year round.
Yeah. yeah.
So really it is about, have you got something that's evergreen? You're thinking about the texture of the foliage, you're thinking about the colour of the foliage. And then you are thinking about perhaps more for your annual plantings. And I'm thinking about, you know, we're coming into summer now in Canberra, which is in Australia, which is where we are. And for me, you know, those pots that in winter have had something really amazing, you know, flowering camellia or something, I'm sticking petunias around the base, which will give me a nice big pop of colour, but they're not going to last through to the next year again. So this is the kind of thing you'd be using in a small garden as well.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't want to use hedging type of plants in small gardens, because they just rob you of space.
They do,
yeah.
they do.
So, you know, small spaces, I think you just don't want those sort of viburnums or camellias or anything that's kind of, you know, bay trees, things
big
that fillers, hedge up.
The fillers almost.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because,
nondescript
if you,
kind
but if you
of
do,
things.
Actually, if you do have those sort of ones that are already in pots or you want to bring them, basically strip the leaves off the base of them, make them a bit like topiary, and then plant things underneath. And so you've got that sense of depth.
Those layers again of foliage and interest. But this is also a fantastic place where you can think about, how can I use climbers to maximise my space? So having things that actually go up the walls, even the living walls, I think they're pretty hard to keep alive, I have to say. But if you've had success, let us know about it, because it'd be interesting. But those kind of, you know, even plants that will climb up the wall, that will give you some flowers as well, perhaps, or that might climb over the top of a structure to give you a bit of that roof effect.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think with climbers, very few are successful on balconies because it is a very wind exposed, and it's a different kind of little microclimate in a balcony arrangement. But down on the
ground floor
climbers
townhouses,
can be really
yeah.
useful.
Yeah.
Interesting on the green walls.
Yes.
Because, you know, I have rarely seen a good one.
There is a good one near my house, but it's not in a small space. And I think you need, and it's a grass wall as well. And I have seen the work they put into it. So it's probably because they're really working hard to maintain it. But I agree with you. And in fact, we were just, shout out to Jackie Warburton in Canberra. We were just at Jackie's house on the weekend, and she was showing us, and she is a succulent expert, and she has had challenges with her succulent wall as well. So I think they are pretty tricky. So go into that, like there's a, you know, a bio warning on this one.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are hard to do. Plants haven't been designed to grow vertically as a general rule.
Yeah, yeah. And they're fairly high maintenance because you're having to, if you don't have an irrigation system that's set up to support that, you're constantly having to water them.
That's right. Is there anything else we need to be talking about with plants? I guess the only other thing I just wanted to talk about is thinking about the colour of your plants, because you do want to be thinking about the colour of the foliage and the colour of any flowers, so that you've got that in the back of your mind, that principle of unity. And you also want to be thinking a bit about simplicity. Don't go wild here. Otherwise, it will look like a jungle.
Yeah. In fact, this is one where, because I just know how you feel about variegated plants.
That's right.
For some reason, Sachi has this, like, this variegation bias.
I don't know what it is. Yeah, I know.
But I have to say, because not all courtyards or small gardens are sunny spaces. And, you know, you're really beholden to maybe the walls or whatever surrounds it, that you're going to have these permanent shade spaces. And I think this is where using variegated plants are fantastic, because it lights up a dark space. And so I love the things.
So this might be one place that I might be, you know, inclined to use a variegated plant.
Could tempt you. Like Lamium is a little ground cover. It's got beautiful variegation in it, variegated hostas.
Even the little Mondo's grasses and things like that provide a bit of light. I acknowledge this.
So when you go to your downsized townhouse and we have a shady corner, I'm going to bring you a little housewarming gift.
It's going to be variegated. A variegated plant. And then I'm going to think, she knows me, yet she brings me this. So I think we've probably done plants. Let's move on to materials.
Yeah, materials great, because I think the success of your small space is about the materials.
Yeah.
We talked about unity. So having a whole lot of competing materials is one of those no-nos. If it's a small space, you need to try and keep the hardscaping materials very unified and very deliberate, and not bring in different sort of textures. And
yes, that's right. It's all the same principles really as for the plants. You want your textures to be a bit unifying, you want your colours, you want your materials to be unifying as well. So are there any particular materials that you would be using in a small space?
Yeah, you know, I really favour the high-end composite timbers.
Ah, yes, you do. You do. I have yet to be convinced about how attractive they are.
But where I was going at is I favour them particularly in small space gardens, and because they're low maintenance and because you can elevate them onto a pedestal system. So the drainage is a wonderful thing. And also, so in Maria's courtyard, this was where it stepped out from the house, and there's always this step down.
I know, annoying step down.
Into the veranda area. And it's difficult for older people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she's...
Or if you've had a few drinks, you forget.
Well, this client, she's in her 80s, and she just really wanted this level space. So what we did is and she never used this courtyard because it was tiled, it was a bit dank and dirty, and, you know, tiles seem to...
They're cold
and they
hard.
Keep the dirt.
Yeah, yeah.
And so what we did is we put a pedestal system down and put the composite timber, and it's at the same level as the floor in the house.
That's a great idea, yeah.
So there's no awkward step, it's direct, it's... and also the space just feels lighter and warmer underfoot and not dirty. And now she's in it and she loves it.
Yeah. And I can imagine also the composite timber probably doesn't warp when it gets wet like normal timber would.
Doesn't warp. Yeah. In fact, some of those good ones have 50-year life guarantees.
Oh, and that's worth having.
I know. And, you know, the screwless ones too. And you put the screws and they disappear. Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's a really great material. The other sort of materials, I think, is looking at things like lightweight planters.
Yes. And lightweight plant mixers actually as well, because the soil is a really heavy thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not so much a hardscape, but I just thought I'd throw
it
in there.
Yeah, but it's an important one because, you know, particularly on balconies, you need to look at your load limits, and some of those big planters have a lot of soil in them.
They do.
So you can actually buy lightweight potting mixers, but what you really should do is add extra perlite in there. and those type of things that give aeration. And the plants like that anyway.
They do. They do. And that will really lighten up your soil. Absolutely. But also if you've got really big planters, you also want to be thinking about, do you actually fill the entire planter, or do you have a separator, if they're a particularly deep one, where you have something else at the bottom and then you just fill some of the top area, and you'll need to work out how much soil the plant needs, obviously, to survive properly. But some of those deep planters, they'll never get roots down that far.
Yeah. Another point on the using the composite timber and elevating on pedestal system is the ability to run wires underneath the timber.
So for lighting and
For running a little water feature, because, you know, it's always better to have things plugged in.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, because solar doesn't really work too well in balcony situations.
That's right, because there's often an area that doesn't get that sun.
And
that
no
they
one
need.
Wants cords running along a balcony or a courtyard.
It looks awful. No one wants cords, full stop. Can they just not do electricity like Bluetooth? If only.
Hard running your fountain. But that's a great way to hide cords and also to give you lighting around the outskirts of your small garden.
So I guess the last thing is really sort of accessories and what we need to be thinking about here, because I guess this is where it's the stuff that really starts to make your garden usable, because I'm thinking accessories like tables and benches and, you know, barbecues and that kind of thing. Without them, you're probably not going to be doing a lot in your garden other than looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think one of the biggest problems I see all the time is when those people downsize is they bring their old outdoor table.
Yeah, and
they try and squish it. And you can't even get into the balcony
because that's
right. It's all just too tight. So you've got to look.
Or it's jammed up against a wall.
Yeah. And so I think, you know, you've got to rethink the whole space. You say, right, proportional furniture, and how many people am I going to entertain in this balcony?
Absolutely.
You know, and it usually comes down to a little bistro setting.
Yep.
And that can work really nicely.
But there are some things you can do. Do you actually, you know, do you have some foldable furniture that you just bring out when you need to have more people? Do you have an extendable table so that you can actually extend it when you do need to use it? And the other thing that I really value in, and it goes almost to this, your plants need to be multi-seasonal. I think if you're going to put some hardscaping in, think about how you might be able to incorporate that into your setting. So, for instance, have a capped, you know, retaining wall or a capped garden bed, which then becomes your bench for your table. And when you don't have your table there because it's a folding table, you actually just have a really nice garden bench. So thinking cleverly about what you're actually putting into that garden as well.
And if you're up high on a balcony, have heavy furniture.
Hairy furniture, I thought you were going to say. Heavy furniture, heavy, so it doesn't blow.
Doesn't blow away. So you've really got to think about the wind effect when you're up higher.
Yes.
But you don't get at the ground. Also, I think when you're in communal kind of living arrangements, like a higher density living arrangements, you've got to be respectful of your neighbours below you
in a balcony. Yes.
So I always use the enclosed wicking beds that has a reservoir in it. So
that's a great idea.
Yeah. So you know what? The biggest bugbear for people in units is the neighbour who waters and it all runs down onto their balcony. People hate that.
They do. Well, and it's even worse because I have had this experience of when I've lived in an apartment that you get watered along with the balcony above, which is not very pleasant either.
Yeah, and this is a great way to keep the water where it's meant to be, at the base of the plant, and keeps it neat and contained.
It does, and quite apart from that, it's better than wasting all this water, particularly when we're in the Southern Hemisphere about to go into a hot summer with a potential El Nino and drought looming. Mm. So really important. So what about other accessories? We touched briefly on a water feature and lighting.
I think water features are fantastic in a small space. They just bring movement. They bring interest. You can have a light
in them
at
night time. They make you want to go to the toilet.
I never like the ones that just have that one kind of tap that sounds like it's been left on.
Yes.
That irritates me. But ones that have a bit of a flow, that glisten a bit, I just love them. I think it just makes you want to be out there. It's a very pleasant sound.
Even something that's still water, that just gives you that sense of a bit of water there, and you might have some. And I've got a nice, very shallow pond, some miniature water lilies and things like that. Still gives you a bit of a focal point and some interest, but gives you that sense of water as well. And in fact, I was just going to say about lighting, because I'm a big fan of lighting in a garden, particularly if you're in a smaller apartment and your outdoor living space is a real extension of your living space. Having some good and well-placed lighting is something that can make it a space that's usable the entire day, not just, well, a night, not just in the day, which is otherwise what you're limited to. So think about how you do that.
Every bit of that little small space matters.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Make it work. It's an extension of your house.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so make it work.
So in that as well is hanging things off the ground. Like things that, so if you've got a hanging pot, then it's not another thing on the ground. So it makes the area feel larger. But you've also got that vertical interest. So think about where you can hang your pots and take them off the ground. What about...
Except I was going to say, don't clutter it, because that's, I think, I've got in my head a lot of people use pots and overuse hanging pots. So again, think about judicious placement, the simplicity, the unity, and you're maintaining your scale as well.
Yeah, well, what I think about with hanging pots is in an area where you have pots underneath it.
Yes.
So you've got this sense of elevation and
verticality. And water catching.
Yes, water catching, that's right. Water that pot, drips down to the others.
That's right.
Also rugs.
Yes,
outdoor rugs. So they are a bit hit and miss, I think, because sometimes they can look really ratty and get quite dirty, but otherwise
they can create a really... I think it's a maintenance thing, again.
You know, actually, this comes back to the maintenance. So no space is no maintenance. You've got to know what your... tolerance for maintenance is, because anything that's worth doing well takes a bit of work.
It takes effort, that's right. And particularly outdoor spaces, because you will get dust settling, you'll get leaves blowing around. That doesn't stop just because you're in a balcony or you have a courtyard in your townhouse. Yeah. So you do need to be thinking about how much are you willing to put in. And the fewer crevices you have, the less places for things to build up. Is my suggestion.
Well, I look forward to seeing your new small space garden and how you're going to design it. So you're going to have to leave everything behind and start afresh.
That's right. There's a challenge.
There you go. So that leads us probably about where we need to be.
I think so.
Yeah. So maybe a couple of summary points.
Yeah. So for me, it really goes back to being clear about the principles. So simplicity, that unity, that scale in your design, and thinking about how you really use your plants hard. Make sure that they're delivering value every season. That's my takeaways.
That's great. I'll add one to that, which is it's better to have a few big deliberate pieces
than never to have loved it all. Sorry, couldn't help myself.
And that's a good place to leave it, because I'm sure the listeners knew where I was going with that. Okay.
We'll talk to you next time.
Okay, au revoir.
Follow us on Facebook or Instagram. See you later.